Welcome to the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. Today is Sunday, August 1st, 2021. I'm Steven Jensen. Hope you had a great week, and thank you to everybody who reached out this past week and this weekend. I had a good friend of mine, Derek Thornberry, pass away last Saturday. The funeral was yesterday, so thanks once again to everyone who reached out. Got to spend the day with his brother, Jason, yesterday, who's one of my best friends, and our whole kind of group of friends from high school and college, so it was good to see familiar faces and all that stuff, but obviously, it was a rough day because, you know, the funeral of a good friend and a former teammate of mine. We wrestled together in high school and went together to college and everything. So it's been a very, it's been kind of a tough weekend. And for that reason, you will not be hearing a review of Impact's Homecoming from me. But Joel Pearl has you covered over on the Fightful YouTube channel. So Denise normally does the post shows for the Impact Plus events. I was going to fill in for her because she was covering Bellator, but then, of course, I had the unforeseen circumstance of this funeral coming up and all that. Joel stepped up, did a great job, so make sure if you want, you know, normally, obviously, I cover Impact Wrestling right here on the Weekender, but if you want a full in-depth review of Impact Homecoming, Joel has you covered over there on the Fightful YouTube channel. You can watch that on demand at any time, and then, of course, this next weekend, I'll have more results for this upcoming Impact Wrestling show. So we'll get back on track with Impact Wrestling next weekend, and always make sure to join us on the Fightful Twitch channel. That's twitch.tv/FightfulGaming. Me and Joel are always on there doing the live watch-alongs where we put the show up on the screen with us, and then it's me and him, and then we usually have another guest on there with us, and it's a lot of fun. We just kind of kick back, interact with the chat, talk about wrestling, talk about not just Impact Wrestling, we talk about the world of wrestling, whatever's going on, and whatever you guys want to talk about there in the chat. So, join us this upcoming Thursday for Impact Wrestling, and once again, check out the Homecoming review from Joel Pearl on the YouTube Fightful channel. So, today's topics. We have a little bit different of a show today. So, since there's no Impact, and also because there's a big weekend coming up for independentwrestling.tv, rather than doing a recommended show of the week, which I normally do, for those of you who are new to the Weekender podcast here, basically I go to IWTV, I watch a lot of stuff throughout the week, and then I pick out one of my favorite shows and talk a little bit about it to get you to go over there and check it out and watch it. But this weekend, we have some really big stuff going on, and I'd rather do predictions this week for independentwrestling.tv. I'll still highlight a bunch of talent and give you my thoughts on, the upcoming matches. So what we're going to do this week is IWTV 100 predictions. I'm going to talk a little bit about the Scenic City Invitational because that's coming up this weekend as well out of Chattanooga, Tennessee. And then we have results for GCW Homecoming Part 2. I gave you the Part 1 results last week. We have results for 205 Live, NXT UK, Ring of Honor, NWA Power, and a recap of the latest Being the Elite episode titled Your Bloody Hands. So we're going to start off this week with IWTV 100 predictions. So basically, I'm just going to go through here, give you my thoughts, highlight some talent, and basically the concept of this is the 100th defense of the Independent Wrestling TV Championship is going to be on the line on this show. So current champion Wheeler Yuta will be defending the title against top-ranked Daniel Garcia, or one of the top-ranked wrestlers, Daniel Garcia. They have a whole top 10 ranking system. Garcia's the next one up to bat for the title and a very deserving challenger. So we'll talk about a little bit more of that here in just a second. As always, when you check out independentwrestling.tv, please use code FIGHTTALK when you sign up for the service. That's code FIGHTTALK, all as one word with no space. That helps support my personal podcast, the Fight Talk podcast, and the people that I have helping me out over there as well. So once again, code FIGHTTALK on IWTV.live or independentwrestling.tv. This is a great weekend to have that service because you're going to have IWTV 100, you're going to have night one of the Scenic City Invitational Tournament on Friday. IWTV 100 is going to be on Sunday. On Friday, you've got the Scenic City Invitational night one. On Saturday morning, you've got the Future Showcase for the SCI, which has had winners such as Manders and Marco Stunt. And Nolan Edward, like guys who have really blown up since winning the Futures Tournament. Then, of course, you have night two of the Scenic City Invitational Tournament on Saturday night. So three shows out of Chattanooga, Tennessee that are, honestly, it's probably my favorite wrestling tournament of the year every year. I love the SCI. And I love the people involved and who run it and stuff. I mean, it's just, and I've been there live a few times. Saturday night, I'll be covering UFC 265. So I won't be in Chattanooga live for the show, but I'll be watching on IWTV while I'm watching the UFC show. So got all that stuff coming up on this one platform this weekend. So once again, Code Fight Talk helps me out, and enjoy some professional wrestling over there on independentwrestling.tv. So yeah, IWTV 100. I'm going to give you my predictions for this show. I'd give you the SCI predictions, but the problem with doing that is the brackets are never put out until like the night of. So it's a big mystery as to who's going to be wrestling who and how the whole tournament's going to kind of lay out. So I can't really give you predictions as far as like a bracket, but what I will say, I don't want to have to go through all the people because I'll be sitting here for hours doing that. But I think a good prediction for the SCI tournament, I think last year's winner, Daniel McCabe, has a really good chance of being the first ever back-to-back SCI champion. I think he's a real front runner, especially because he won and then we had so much issue with COVID and he didn't wrestle hardly at all over that like last year and a half. And this could help kind of regain momentum and restart him where he kind of left off before all that with the win in the SCI. And I say last year, it was actually 2 years ago, technically, because of COVID. And, they had the 2019 tournament. The 2020 tournament was a bit different, and it was run mainly from Action Wrestling. It wasn't in Chattanooga, and Nolan Edward wound up winning that. But Daniel McCabe did not compete. But that was also the Future Showcase, technically. So what am I talking about? It's confusing because there's the Futures and the quote-unquote real tournament. So we didn't have a Scenic State Invitational tournament last year. We had a Futures tournament, but Daniel McCabe is technically the last SCI tournament winner. Hope that all makes sense for you guys. That all being said, I mean, there is a lot of great talent in the SCI tournament. But I think Daniel McCabe is probably my pick to win the whole thing, but it's a real toss up. There's so much good talent. Like, I think a guy like Derek Neal could gain a lot from winning that. I think Cabana Mandan has been on the brink of like really breaking out for a long time. Both those guys also, really big for the New South brand, but I could see them potentially winning. I mean, Daniel Garcia, who I'm going to be talking about, he's going to be wrestling Wheeler Yuta, the next night after the second night of the tournament. So could he win the SCI, then go on to maybe win the IWTV championship all in one weekend? That'd be pretty legendary. I mean, you got Brett Eisen in that thing, which is like, he's always going to be a threat, especially in Tennessee. So a lot of great talent, but I think I'm going to go with Daniel McCabe to go back-to-back and just have a feeling about it. And then for the Futures, there's a lot of good names in that too. The real two standouts, I think, are Hoodfoot Mo Atlas and Billy Starks. But I think I'm going to go with Hoodfoot to win the whole Futures tournament because he was a guy who, honestly, he's been doing such great work in Paradigm and other places that I figured he was like, this isn't a dig at anybody, but I felt like he was too big of a name to be in Futures to begin with, if I'm just being honest. Like, there are some people that are in the Future, that are in the SCI tournament that I think actually are, some of them are, I think, even less well known than Hoodfoot is at the moment. And I just felt like the Futures thing is like, if he's going to be in Futures, I think he has to win the entire thing. And my second choice, of course, like I said, would probably be Billy Starks. But I think Hoodfoot could really use that Futures win. Those are my picks for the SCI. And once again, that'll be on Friday night. That'll be on Saturday night. And then Saturday morning for the Futures show. So the rest of the matches we have for IWTV 100, as far as my predictions, we've got Logan Easton LaRue, Richard Holiday, and Alexander James taking on Hallowicked, Jigsaw, and Ultramanus Black. Those are all that Hallowicked, Jigsaw, Ultramanus team. I remember a lot of these guys from like years ago, probably mainly from like PWG and those types of companies, Chikara probably even more so. But it's wild to see them still out there. And then you got kind of the quote-unquote younger, new generation team of LaRue, Holiday, and James. But I'm going to take Hallowicked, Jigsaw, and Ultramanus Black as my prediction in that one, basically due to the kind of like their OG status in the scene, and I think it'd just be a good win for them. Logan Easton LaRue loses fairly often when I watch him on the show. Like, he's a very solid wrestler, but I see him lose way more often than I see him win. And then, Richard Holiday and Alexander James, both very, very solid. I'm just leaning towards the Hollow Wicked Jigsaw and Ultramanus team. Next up, we got Matt Mikowski versus Kevin Koo. This is going to be a damn good technical matchup. I love these guys big time. Like, Mikowski and Daniel Garcia are very similar in a lot of ways to me, and that's a compliment to each. Daniel Garcia has competed, he has like an MMA background. I know Matt Mikowski has competed in Bellator. I mean, Matt Mikowski is legit, and he's still very young, and he's got a lot of potential. Kevin Koo, of course, we see him a lot in MLW, mainly as a team, or a part of Team Filthy or Violence is Forever with Dominic Guarini, led by Filthy Tom Lawler. Kevin Koo also runs and promotes and books and basically the go-to guy for Southern Underground Pro out of Nashville, Tennessee. He's a dude who I interviewed years ago, actually out of my old apartment in Nashville. Me, Kevin Koo, and Righteous Jesse did a podcast years ago as SUP was just kind of starting out. It's wild to think how much Kevin Koo has accomplished since then. I'm so proud of the dude, and he's a guy who still is improving and hasn't even hit his prime, in my opinion. And he's already causing a lot of waves in the scene of independent wrestling and just wrestling in general. I mean, MLW is, I know it's Major League Wrestling, but that's, you know, really high up there in the pecking order of prestigious independent promotions. And some might not even call it an indie because, you know, once again, I mean, it has TV distribution and stuff, so... That all being said, I think this is a great stylistic matchup. I think I'm going to go with Matt Mikowski, mainly because Kevin Koo really is kind of more so known as a tag team guy at the moment, and Dominic Guarini is injured, and I think Kevin Koo's just kind of killing time, for lack of better words. Like, he's a great singles wrestler as well, but I just think the bigger money with him right now is him and Guarini as a tag team. And Matt Mikowski has a lot of momentum as a singles wrestler and I think he's still years away from his prime, as wild as that is. And Mikowski has been he's been killing it. And I feel like the momentum he has as a singles wrestler needs to keep going up. And I think Koo doesn't get hurt at all by a loss, because once again, he just goes back to teaming with Guarini once Guarini's healthy and they take over the world as Violence is Forever. They're an awesome tag team. So that said, I'm going to go Matt Mikowski for my prediction. After that, we have a multi-person ladder match with Steve Sanders versus Gigi Everson versus Reed Walker versus Austin Luke versus Ryan Redfield versus Marcus Mathers. A lot of good talent in this one, some young talent in this one. This is a really hard one to call, and I can't really make any predictions. I just feel like these people are just going to go out there and do absolutely nuts things, because I think they're going to try to steal the show. Because on paper, name value wise, this is going to be the one with like the least amount of star power, if that makes sense. Now, that said, the same thing was said of the Hardy Boys, the Dudley Boys, and Edge and Christian for their TLC matches, right? Like, they were kind of the under the radar guys on the show, but they knew in this setting with these advantages of like the ladders and, you know, the weapons and the spots they can do, they could go out there and try to outshine all the big stars. And I get kind of those kind of vibes from this one as well. I'm going to take Marcus Mathers. He might be the youngest of the group. He's probably only like 17 or 18 years old. I honestly don't know, but very, very young. And I mainly see him out of H2O, which is Matt Tremont's promotion. And I feel like he's a kid who, I mean, he's going to be a big star in wrestling. And he's still like, once again, years away from his prime. He's still growing into his body. He's a teenager, you know what I mean? But he has a lot of potential, and he already has a lot of talent. He got good people around him. So I'm going to go with Marcus Mathers as my pick to win the ladder match. But I think we're going to see a lot of really crazy spots, and like I said, a lot of people who are out to steal the show, because especially through the rest of this card I'm going to read out, I mean, it is just loaded with star power. So the next match we have, Jonathan Gresham taking on Adam Priest. This is going to be a great technical wrestling matchup. Jonathan Gresham, a former IWTV champion, the first ever IWTV champion. Adam Priest, a dude who I see just working his ass off. He's done some stuff for AEW Dark. I see him a lot in New South, in Action Wrestling. He's done some stuff with SUP. But Adam Priest, very, very solid. And a guy who has gotten as over as he is because of how good he is in the ring. He's a guy who is not very tall, a guy who looks slightly unassuming. Like, you know, he looks like an athlete. He's very well put together, but he just isn't very big. I mean, that's just really, at the end of the day, he's just not a very big guy. And especially even in comparison to, like, your standard, you know, sized indie wrestler. But Priest's technical wrestling abilities is what has really put him on the map, in my opinion. And on top of that, he does really good character work on top of it, but he gets you to notice him and care about him, in my opinion, because he goes in there and just, he hits really crisp moves, and he has a really cool move set that he uses. Jonathan Gresham, I could say all the same things about, only like times 100, because Jonathan Gresham, I think, is the best pure technical wrestler in the world right now. Once again, that's nothing against Adam Priest at all. I'm a big fan of Priest. But Jonathan Gresham, I think, if I had to, you know, gun to my head, someone was like, name the best pure wrestler in the world right now, the first name coming out of my mouth is Jonathan Gresham. And, yeah, I think this is just going to be really damn good. And I think this is the reason that Adam Priest is in this match. Everything that I just said about him, all those compliments about Adam Priest I just gave, is the reason why he's the one against Jonathan Gresham on this show. Because this is a big spot to be in. It's going to have really, high expectations. Whoever wrestles Gresham's going to have to bring it on this show, because, you know, Gresham's going to be out to outshine and outwork everybody on the show if he can. And once again, the more I go up this, the more you're going to realize the star power I'm talking about. So it's like Gresham, Ring of Honor pure champion, already one of the biggest names on this show, one of the biggest names worldwide on this show, a lot of exposure currently through Ring of Honor, and my prediction is, you know, I got to go with Jonathan Gresham for the win. But this will be a win-win scenario for everybody involved, including Adam Priest. If Adam Priest loses this match, but can make it believable, a couple times during the match, make it believable that he's about to beat Jonathan Gresham. If you can suspend my disbelief to that point where I'm sitting there going, oh, Adam Priest has got this. 1, 2, oh, Adam Priest, oh, he's got this locked in. There's no way Gresham's getting to the ropes. If I can get in that mindset, it's a win-win. Because even in a loss, Adam Priest's stock is going to rise if this is a really good match. If this is a standout match on this show, Adam Priest, I think, is gonna do wonders for his career, in my opinion. But once again, I have to go with Jonathan Gresham as my prediction to win. After that, we have Warhorse, another former IWTV champion, taking on John Wade Murdoch. This is going to be interesting. Because I feel like if there is going to be a deathmatch style match on this show, this will be it. At the very least, hardcore. John Wayne Murdoch, I mainly see in that element. I mainly see him in deathmatches. He's very over with the crowds that he performs in front of, undoubtedly. From what I've heard, like, I think he does pretty well, just like as far as career-wise. Like, I've asked people on the indies, like, man, what... You think John Wayne Murdoch's, like, doing all right? Like, because he really puts his body through a lot. They're like, I think he's doing pretty damn good. Like, I think he's pretty happy. And it's like, hell yeah, good for him. Like, if you can be happy and do the style of wrestling you want to do and be your own boss and stay independent, more power to you. You know what I mean? I really respect that. And Warhorse is in an interesting spot in contrast to John Wayne Murdoch, because I think John Wayne Murdoch is in a spot where it's like, he's good. If the rest of his career was doing exactly what he's doing right now, I think he's probably happy. Warhorse, I think, is in a different position, because we saw him on TNT against Cody. He was the longtime IWTV champion. He held the belt for like 2 years or something like that. Really long title run. But since losing the IWTV championship to Lee Moriarty, who then, of course, lost it to Wheeler Yuta, I think that Warhorse's momentum has halted quite a bit. This is just me being honest as a huge Warhorse fan. Like, I was watching Warhorse live as, you know, the little Viking, Jake Parnell. Like, I was watching him pretty much right out of training camp in the St. Louis area. Like, I have been pretty much a day one fan of Warhorse, and I still am. I'm a big, big Jake Parnell guy. But he seems a bit stagnant right now. And I think that he, you know, I don't know if it's a motivation factor or what, because it's one of those things where I just don't see him ever going to the WWE. I don't think it'd be a good fit for him or the company, but I still think he has a chance of, like, getting back into, you know, AEW for something, or, you know, back on TNT, or maybe more GCW or something. But I think Warhorse still definitely has the ability to get back to that level. I just feel like he kind of hit that level, got the match on Dynamite, and then shortly after loses the IWTV championship. We don't see him on Dynamite anymore, and like, it's kind of like, now what? And that's all to say that I think that would be a good reason for this to be a very violent match. I think that there should be a deathmatch element to this. Whether they go full-on deathmatch or not, I don't know, but there needs to be a hardcore element at the very least, in my opinion. I think Warhorse needs to do all, it's not the same thing, but it's almost in a similar, from like a similar lens of what Matt Cardona just did with Nick Gage, where Matt Cardona, like, he needed to kind of reinvent himself. And he got the whole world talking about him because they didn't expect him to go the lengths he went with Nick Gage. Warhorse, I've seen Warhorse do a lot of crazy stuff. I've seen him bleed all over the place. I've seen him be very violent. But I feel like if him and John Wayne Murdoch have like a really, really, really good death match on this show, it'll help stand out. And then it maybe gets more eyes on Warhorse, as like, because he's done some stuff with GCW, but they haven't really used him much or really pushed him. But I feel like that could be a big opportunity. Like, maybe this, he has this great match with Murdoch, and they're like, you know, GCW comes calling, or MLW comes calling, or ROH comes calling, or something. But something to get Warhorse back in that spot, to get back on the map. Because I think he has the talent. I'm a huge fan, and I feel like he just needs that little something right now to get a buzz about him again. And him and John Wayne Murdoch, I think that's a possibility. As far as a prediction, it's a tough one to call, especially if it does go that direction of a hardcore or a death match. But I'm going to go with Warhorse as my prediction to win, because I just feel like he needs it more to get back on track to kind of the trajectory he was on pre-AEW Dynamite against Cody. Moving on, we have what will most likely be the co-main event of the show. We have Orange Cassidy and Chris Statlander, both former IWTV champions, against Lee Moriarty and Trish Adora. Lee Moriarty, a former IWTV champion himself. Trish Adora, obviously, incredible talent. One of the best female wrestlers in the entire world. Adora and Chris Statlander are two of my favorites, for sure. For sure. And I'd love to see Trish Adora get signed. I'm honestly surprised she hasn't been signed somewhere big up to this point, because the talent is absolutely there. Lee Moriarty, one of the best technical wrestlers in the world. I say Jonathan Gresham is the best. I'd say Lee Moriarty is probably, I mean, he's in the top five for sure. He might be in the top two or three. That's how great I think Lee Moriarty is. I think Dana Makabe is in the conversation as well, by the way. The guy that I believe will probably go back, that could potentially go back-to-back at the SCI this year. But Lee Moriarty, one of the best technical wrestlers in the world. A guy that I know has a lot of eyes on him on, like, the next level. And a guy who we're going to see, obviously, in MLW this upcoming season. Then, of course, you have Chris Statlander and Orange Cassidy, both AEW stars. Orange Cassidy, one of the biggest stars in all professional wrestling. Whether you like him or you don't, that is the truth. It's undeniable that Orange Cassidy is incredibly over with the AEW crowd. He was incredibly over with the indie crowd before that, especially in Beyond Wrestling prior to signing with AEW. Chris Statlander, I think, has potential to be one of the best wrestlers in the world, regardless of gender. Like, I'm a very big Chris Statlander fan. I think she still hasn't hit her prime yet either, and she's already, like, before she signed with AEW, I was like, how is she not signed somewhere? Like, that she was, like, the top of my list as far as, especially when it came to female talent, when companies, like, were really kind of starving for more female stars. I was like, Chris Statlander would just be such a great fit anywhere. Alien gimmick or not, like, she's just incredibly athletic, and she's learned so quickly and rose the ranks of the independent so fast. It's just very impressive. So, you know, this is a star-studded match right here. And as far as a prediction for a winner, this is a tough one to call, because Lee Moriarty and Trish Adora, this would do a lot for them, even though they're both big names on the indies, for them to beat two massive stars like OC and Chris Statlander, especially because you have to imagine there's probably going to be a lot of eyes on this show that maybe don't watch a lot of IWTV. You know, maybe a lot of AEW fans, for instance, that just find out that OC and Statlander are on this show, and they're like, oh, hell yeah, like, I'll tune in to watch them. And then they see Moriarty and Adora beat them. I think that makes Moriarty and Adora look like stars to a new set of fans. But it's really hard to pick against Cassidy and Statlander. I mean, they are that. They are stars. They really are. And they're both very good in-ring workers with very, very strong gimmicks. So that one's a real toss-up for me because I think it would do a lot for Moriarty and Adora. But I also don't know if you put Orange Cassidy and Statlander on a show like this at their level of star power to have them lose. So I'm going to take OC and Statlander as my prediction. But I think this is going to be one of the best mixed tag team matches you're going to see. Like that. Obviously, this is the only one on this show. But as far as like in general, because I don't know of like a ton of great off the top of my head, you know, mixed tag matches like that I'd put on the same level of like you have to go watch this match type of stuff. You know what I mean? This has potential to maybe be that match where someone's like, hey, give me a good mixed tag, and I'm just like, OC and Statlander versus Moriarty and Adora. That's what I'm hoping comes out of this match because the talent is there for something really special. Once again, I'll take Cassidy and Statlander as my prediction. And main event time, we have Wheeler Yuta defending the IWTV Championship against contender Daniel Garcia. I am really looking forward to this. This should be a great stylistic matchup. Wheeler Yuta, of course, has gotten a lot more eyes on him lately from being in AEW, and I don't know if he's been signed to the company, but I feel like if he hasn't yet, he will be. So this could be the opportunity to take the belt off of Yuta and put it on Garcia, who I think would be a great IWTV champion, and he fits the mold perfect, especially if they wanted kind of what they wanted to do with Wheeler Yuta as champion long term. They could pivot and pretty much do the same type of thing with Daniel Garcia, because both guys are very similar from the sense of being just really, really solid technical wrestlers that are going to add to every single show they go on, and they can wrestle anybody and it's going to be good. So, you know, and Yuta, like, I'm so happy to see where he's at. Like, the first time I saw him wrestle was literally in front of like 15 people, and this was like probably 4 years ago or something. And he has just improved tremendously since then. He was already very good, but he has gotten so much better. And he's a real perfect story of, like, you know, AEW, the way that they handle these situations. Like, AEW brought him in for AEW Dark. He had some solid matches. Then they put him on Dynamite, and he had a solid match on Dynamite. And it's like, you can't ask for anything more than that. He's a really, really damn good in-ring worker who got a different kind of look to him. Like, his gear is different. his name's even different. I had a roommate, actually, in college whose name was Yuta. He was from Japan, and he reminds me a lot of him in a lot of ways. Like, Yuta was, like, the best roommate I've had in my life, one of the coolest guys, and, like, they have very similar vibes, the two of them, with the same name. He just reminds me a lot of one of my friends, I guess is kind of where I'm going with that. Like, Yuta reminds me of one of my friends, which is a really good memory because it's a friend of mine that I can't say one negative thing about it, you know what I mean? It just kind of reminds me of that when I see Wheeler Yuta, and I feel like he just kind of represents for like a kind of a broader group of people, kind of just the good guys in life. Like, Wheeler Yuta is just a good dude who's just really solid at wrestling, isn't super flashy or anything like that, but brings something different to the table, and he's just damn good in the ring. Like, I think it's all good, you know what I mean? And Daniel Garcia, I can't say enough good things about. He's still very young. He's still getting better. He's another one. Pretty much you can say the same about most of this card. Like, most of these guys haven't even hit their prime yet, which is, like, so scary to think. Because, in a good way. Because, like, they're already so damn talented. But Daniel Garcia, I feel like we're just kind of hitting the little tip of the iceberg. Almost. I mean, just barely touching the tip right now. Like, we're not even... I'm going to put it this way. We're halfway up the mountain with Daniel Garcia to, like, knowing how good he actually is. And he's already incredibly talented. But I'm going to take Daniel Garcia. I think we get a new champion at IWTV 100, mainly for the reasons I've already said. I think that Wheeler Yuta is going to get signed by AEW if he hasn't already. I think that, similar to Orange Cassidy, who was the IWTV champion when he signed with AEW, they'll have to take the title off of Yuta most likely so that they'll have a champion that can tour from promotion to promotion consistently. And that's the reason I'm going with that pick. Like, I don't think there's any other reason that Wheeler Yuta would lose the title. I think that he's a great champion for them right now. And Daniel Garcia, I think, would be a great champion as well. It's just a matter of, like, I don't think I'd necessarily end Yuta's title run so quickly, unless, once again, of course, he is signing with AEW. And if he's doing that, which I'm assuming he's going to do, then Daniel Garcia is a fantastic pick to put that title on going forward. So I'm going to say Daniel Garcia is our new IWTV champion, and that is my predictions for IWTV 100. Once again, make sure to use code FIGHTTALK on IWTV.live or independentwrestling.tv. It helps me out a lot when you do that. Moving on, we have results for GCW Homecoming Part 2. So the Part 1 results were on last week's show, and then, of course, like, they had the show live after I had already recorded the Weekender from last week. So I've already given you the Part 1 results. If you want those, make sure to check out the Weekender from last week. Here are the results for Part 2. First match, we had Jordan Oliver over Jack Cartwheel with a figure 4 for the submission. We had Jonathan Gresham over Starboy Charlie with a, I call it, like, it's like a STF without the F. It's like a spinning toe hold almost without, but the way Gresham locks in these submissions and just twerks, the way he really just bends people's limbs. It wasn't just your average, like, spinning toe hold type thing, or like half an STF type thing. I mean, it was a really nasty knee lock, and you really got to see it to understand how nasty it looked. But once again, Gresham over Starboy Charlie by submission. We had the GCW Tag Team Championships on the line. The team of the Second Gear Crew, Mance Warner and Matthew Justice, defeated the team of Ninja Mac and Dante Leon. The finish came when Mance hit a superplex off the top rope onto Dante, and then Matthew Justice came off the top rope with a stage dive for the 1-2-3 to retain the championships. After that, we had Chris Dickinson over Cesar Bononi. This was the only time I think I've ever heard a chant, or the fans do a chant of don't come back. Like, it's almost always please come back or nothing at all. Cesar Bononi got the don't come back chant. I think he was just too, I know he's in AEW currently, I know, with the wingmen and all that, but, like, I think he just comes across to the GCW crowd as too much of, like, a WWE product type guy. Almost for similar reasons that Cardona has so much heat with GCW, but obviously his star power is, like, 1,000 times bigger than Bononi's, you know what I mean? And Dickinson is really the, I call him kind of like the gatekeeper of GCW. Like, you come into GCW, if you're unproven, if you have a good match with Dickinson, you're a made man. You're good to go from there on out. If you don't, or you kind of screw up during the match, or it's clunky, or, like, it just isn't very good, it's going to be a rough night for you, from Dickinson and from the crowd. So Dickinson did try to put him over on the microphone afterwards to save him a little bit. But the finish came when Dickinson, you know, made him tap out to an ankle lock. And it honestly looked like Bononi tapped out prematurely, because Dickinson was going right into an STF. Like, he dropped down for it, but Bononi had already tapped out. So there's that. But once again, Dickinson over Bononi by submission. After that, we had Joey Janela over Atticus Kogar. He hit him with a superplex off the top rope through a plate of glass and a barbed wire board that were all stacked up together with by chairs. So that was nasty. And then after the match, Atticus Kogar did his classic, almost called vintage, just because he does it so often. He took his green meat skewers, popped them into Janela's head. That's always nasty to watch. And there was a really nasty cut under Janela's arm, too, that he actually wound up taping up, like, during the match with just, like, duct tape-looking stuff. So there's a lot of spots in these kind of matches where things can go wrong. And but Janela, like, he's okay, but it's kind of scary when you sometimes when you see certain cuts and stuff happen, and even the talent, you can tell that even Janela was kind of freaked out by the way he was reacting to it. Like, that's when I get kind of concerned. But he powered through. The match was really damn good. The finish was awesome. Kogar kept his heat on the way out, and there you go. After that, we had Iron Beast, the team of Shane Mercer and KTB, over the team of Brayden Lee and Cole Radrick. The finish came when KTB, tosses Brayden Lee into the arms of Shane Mercer, who does a spinning German suplex and bridges for the 1-2-3 and the pin. obviously, I'm a big fan of everyone in this match. Cole Radrick's one of my favorite guys from bell to bell. I talk about him a lot. They did some pretty crazy spots on this match, too. And Brayton Lee is a great young high flyer who's going to be really, really, he's going to be a big star, I think, one day. It's just going to be, you know, just going to be a second. He's very young. But he's got a lot of talent, doing a lot of innovative stuff. But it was cool to watch Iron Beast. Basically, this was a glorified squash where Iron Beast, like, threw around Brayton Lee and Cole Radrick. Like, at one point, they threw Radrick, like, into, like, the third seat of, or, like, the third row of seats in the stands. I mean, it was just nasty. But Iron Beast with the win. After that, we had Calvin Tankman over Ruckus in a dream match for a lot of fans, and especially for Calvin Tankman. I'm sorry about that. I had an alarm set on my phone. But Calvin Tankman, you know, he talked on the microphone afterwards about how much of a dream match this was for him. Ruckus, a real innovator who's been around a long time, done a lot of really cool stuff. And I don't know if he invented all the moves I've seen him do, but he's one of the first guys I definitely remember seeing do a lot of the stuff where he wouldn't just do like a moonsault from his feet. He would do like a moonsault with like a 360 twist and just be like, kind of Amazing Red type stuff, you know, around the same era. And the finish came when Tankman hit a forearm to the back of the head to knock out Ruckus and then pinned him for the 1-2-3. After that, we had Penelope Ford over Alley Catch. She got the one with the perfect plex, which was ironic because Alley Catch is so much, her character is so based now in like being a professional wrestler. Penelope Ford beating her with a professional wrestling move rather than some sort of like crazy deathmatch type stuff. This match was a great example of kind of like why I think AEW is kind of underutilizing Penelope Ford, if I'm being honest, because y'all know me, if you listen to this show, I'm a huge AEW fan, I'm a huge supporter of what they're doing, but I'll even admit sometimes where I feel like there's some missed opportunities, and Penelope Ford is way better in the ring than what I think she's been able to show so far in AEW. She obviously has a great look, and she's very over, and she really looks and carries herself like a big star, and she can really go in the ring better than I think AEW fans realize. And Alley Catch is someone I'd love to see in AEW as well for, you know, for different reasons. I mean, she's obviously great in the ring, but she's also willing to go that extra mile of like doing really, really like legitimate death matches against all genders. I mean, Alley Catch, I have seen, aka Alley Cat, I've seen do some pretty brutal stuff throughout the years. And she's obviously someone I watch a lot in Nashville. She's a big part of Southern Underground Pro. But this match really, for me, spotlighted more so of what Penelope Ford can really do. And I want to see more of that from her in AEW. AEW's women's division gets a lot of flack where, you know, a lot of fans think they don't do enough with the women, or the women aren't showcased, you know, often enough on the show or get enough of the airtime. I think that Penelope Ford is somebody that, given the right push and the right stories and enough just kind of reps out there, she'd be a really interesting foil to somebody like Britt Baker or something. You know what I mean? I feel like you can put that up on a big graphic on like a big poster somewhere or a big billboard, and it's like Penelope Ford, Britt Baker. The casual fan sees that and they're like, oh hell yeah, like these two women are badass, like, and they can fight. Like, this is, like, I want to see this. You know, I feel like there's money in those kind of matchups, potentially. Once again, you got to get Penelope Ford built that way in AEW, but this all is a kind of a long way of saying very impressive in this match, and I think they should do more with her in AEW, and I want to see Alley Catch sign somewhere as well. I'm a very big fan of hers. Main event of the show, we had Drew Parker defeat Jimmy Lloyd. This match was absolutely disgusting. This was a death match. The finish came when Drew Parker hit a Swanton Bomb through a glass plate onto Jimmy Lloyd off of a ladder. There was some stuff in this one. They really made some decisions. At one point, Jimmy Lloyd took two syringes, put one through Drew Parker's ear, put the other one through Drew Parker's nose, and he like squirted like the liquid out of it, like out of the syringe, like to prove it was all the way through and everything. Absolutely disgusting. But Drew Parker honestly might be the best deathmatch wrestler in the world right now. Like, him and Alex Colon are probably the two I think of for, and Nick Gage, of course. But Drew Parker, I mean, I didn't know a whole lot about him before a few weeks ago, and I've been watching a lot of him lately, and GCW has made it look like he is completely unbeatable. And yeah, this was a hell of a death match. Really, really grody, gruesome stuff. But if you're into death matches, this is a damn good match for you to watch. But once again, Drew Parker with the win over Jimmy Lloyd with the Swanton through glass off of a ladder. And then afterwards, Smart Mark Sterling came out, who is the representative of Matt Cardona, the new GCW champion. And he basically talks about how, Cardona isn't going to come there and yada yada. And Nick Gage comes out to attack Sterling. And then Porfiro comes out. And then the SGC comes out along with Alex Colon. And they set up War Games for the night before AEW All Out. So the night before, we're going to have GCW War Games. And then we'll have All Out the next night, all in Chicago, Illinois, in the same town. So that could make for some really, really cool stuff. But once again, yeah, awesome, awesome show from GCW. I'd say part one was the better of the two shows. I mean, for pretty obvious reasons. Like, the Cardona thing alone was, like, worth watch. His just watching the reaction to his win alone was worth the price of the pay-per-view, in my opinion. But part two is still a very, very solid show in its own right, and definitely a show that I'd say go out of your way to watch if you're a fan of GCW or just great independent pro wrestling. Moving on, we have 205 Live results. As per usual, we got the two matches. First one, we have Ikemen-Jiro over Grayson Waller. He got the win with basically a standard enziguri. He had been doing the running enziguri, or the running kind of kick to the face, not even technically an enziguri, almost like a running shine, running running jumping shining wizard almost. But this one was just a straight up basic enziguri. They still call it the Ikemen Slash. Not a big fan of the finish, but I am a fan of Ikemen. I think he's very charismatic. I think he's solid in the ring. Grayson Waller's growing on me some more. I think that, he's got an innovative move set. Maybe one too many rolls for my sake going into moves, but that's just a nitpick, and that's also kind of a heelish type tactic anyways. He hit a really nice stunner at one point that I feel like should just be your finishing move. Like, I don't really love the idea of people just hitting stunners just to each other, but it just isn't effective enough to get a win. That move was just so well established by Steve Austin that, like, that should just be a finisher always, in my opinion. But that's all just kind of nitpicking. The match was solid. Ikemen gets the win. No problem with that at all. Except for, once again, I'd like to see Ikemen have a different finishing move, because everybody does a standard enziguri like that. That's just not good enough to be a finishing move, in my opinion. I remember Chris Jericho used it for a very short time in WWE and, like, quickly changed it, probably for the same reasons I just mentioned. After that, we had Drake Maverick over Asher Hale. And he got the win with a Dudley Dog, which the commentary called the sliced bread, which is wrong. You could even call it the acid drop, but you're not going to call that on WWE TV. Thought this match was solid. The kind of the story of the match was mainly Asher Hale kind of underestimating Drake Maverick and just being just too cocky for his own good. Maverick winds up, basically just outharding Drake Maverick, or sorry, outharding Asher Hale. Like, Hale was in a position to potentially win a couple times, and Maverick just kept going. Like, he took a beating, but he kept going. He wound up kind of hitting his drop kicks and his crossbody and stuff, and ultimately hits him with that Dudley Dog for the 1-2-3. He hit a nice bulldog too during the match. It's like a standard running bulldog out of the corner. So yeah, I mean, this was a solid match. If it was up to me. And I know I'm a bit biased because I'm a big Asher Hale fan, a big Anthony Henry fan from the Indies for years, especially because I got to see him in the Southeast so often. But that being said, like, I got to see Drake Maverick pretty often too. He lived in Nashville when I lived there, and he would main event a lot of the fairground shows. So, I'm kind of equally biased to both, if I'm being honest. But I feel like Hale has just done a lot to help out this 205 Live brand, especially since they released a lot of the kind of bigger name guys recently from the show, from the brand. But so, like, personally, I want to see Asher Hale winning more. I like that they've established him as, like, a heel. Like, it's clear he's a heel now because he was kind of on the fence for a little while. But I don't have anything against Maverick either. Like, I think Maverick's actually a better in-ring wrestler than a lot of people give him credit for. But I feel like there's a lot more money and potential in Asher Hale just for completely different reasons. Like, Drake Maverick's been kind of overexposed to the WWE crowd at this point. Like, we've seen him we've seen him for years now in different roles, and I think he's still obviously valuable to the company, and he's very, very good on the microphone. But you have Asher Hale, who's like this unknown guy to this audience still, that could have really, really solid technical matches, and you can always use more guys like him that can mix in the MMA style in their matches. Like him versus Matt Riddle, for instance, on Raw or something, would be really, really, really damn good. I think even Asher Hale versus a guy like Karrion Kross, given like the right build and stuff like that. I mean, like Asher Hale, I feel like there's some real potential in him to really do a lot for the WWE as like a utility player, as a guy who can go in and just have solid matches, win or lose, with anybody of any size, of any skill level, of any wrestling style. So I just want to see them push Asher Hale. And that's, once again, nothing against Drake Maverick. I want to see Asher Hale beating pretty much everybody right now. Especially when nobody's really paying attention to 205 Live. Like, this is the chance to give new people reps. The Aikman Jr. is a perfect example of that. So, that all said, it was a solid episode of 205 Live. Moving on, we have NXT UK. Show started off with Jordan Devlin over Tristan Archer. He got the win with his Devlin side finish, which is basically a belly-to-back suplex, but he does it in a way in which he boosts Archer up from the ground by pulling his arm, so it does look much more impressive than your standard, you know, back body drop, or belly-to-back, I should say. But that said, this is all just a way to just keep Devlin out there and keep building for him and A-Kid in their Iron Man match. A-Kid comes out after the match, and he's on a crutch, but turns out he doesn't actually need the crutches, and he winds up like beating Jordan Devlin up and got him to get out of the ring and everything. So once again, they're just building towards a 30-minute Iron Man match, which I think is going to be really good between those two. Two really great in-ring wrestlers, Jordan Devlin and A-Kid. After that, we had Ginny over Valkyrie. The finish came when, you know, Joseph Connors kept trying to get involved to help Ginny. Eventually, Valkyrie like knocks Connors off the apron, and it leads to Ginny hitting a ripcord rolling liger kick. But if I'm being honest, like, Ginny looked like she was moving in slow motion when she hit that kick. Like, it really didn't look very good. Like, she's got to get some pop on that thing or a faster spin or something. But it just looked like, and for those of you who watched it, you probably agree. It just looked like a really slow motion version of a liger kick. And the only reason that I feel like that even matters is because, like, if this was real, which I know it isn't, obviously, but if you saw somebody moving that slowly towards you, you would just get out of the way. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. But that said, I do like Ginny and Joseph Connors together, and I understand the push of Ginny. I'm not against her winning by any means. I feel like she just needs a more impressive finisher, or a finisher she can maybe do that looks a bit more effective. After that, we had a good video package of Joe Coffey basically talking about how, you know, he's won a match against Rampage. Rampage has won one against him. And they need to have a rubber match to basically figure out who the best of the two is. And he's working hard for that trilogy fight, basically, which I think is going to be awesome. I think Joe Coffey and Rampage Brown are both really damn good wrestlers, especially for the NXT UK brand. Like, they're two of the best guys they have. After that, we had Stevie Turner over Aaliyah James. Stevie got the win with the rope-assisted flatliner, which the verdict's still out on whether or not I like that move. She hit it better than I've seen her hit it before, but it just takes such a specific setup to do that move. Like, and I know people will say, well, the 619 and stuff. Yeah, but that's also been just so well established that I think people just accept the fact that Mysterio can get you into that position for it. This move literally depends on, it's similar to the 21-plex by Bandido. It completely depends on the opponent themselves walking themselves right into the spot and basically holding onto the ropes in a very specific way for them to do this move. Now, that said, I think Stevie Turner could be big money for the WWE. Like, I think she checks a lot of boxes. She's still kind of green from what I've seen. For instance, I think Aaliyah James is actually probably the better wrestler of the two. But you can tell they're trying to push Stevie, and I think she does have a really bright future. She just needs to get more reps in. And that's exactly what a kind of match like this is. But similar to Jenny, I would probably figure out a different finishing move. Even if it's just her doing a flatliner, like that's fine as a finisher, just a standard flatliner. And then every now and then she hits, you know, the one off the ropes or something in like a big match, maybe something like that. But I really don't love the idea of anyone having any finishing move that's reliant on a specific position or like leverage from the ropes to execute it. The best finishing moves, in my opinion, are moves like the Sweet Chin Music or the Stone Cold Stunner or something like that, where you can hit on anybody, even like a pedigree. Like, you can hit it on anybody. It doesn't matter what size they are or what position you're in, but you can still hit those moves in a bigger context as well. Like, you could hypothetically hit like a Stone Cold Stunner off the ropes or bounce off the ropes into a stunner. You could hit a pedigree off the top ropes, like CM Punk used to with the Pepsi Plunge. The Sweet Chin Music, like we've seen with Shelton Benjamin, someone can jump at you in the air. Michaels hit you with that midair, boom. So there's different versions you can do of it, but the move itself is still super effective in any scenario. So I want to see more of that in wrestling. I think it's cool to be innovative and think of new stuff, but you also have to keep in mind being able to do your finishing move to everybody. And regardless of if it's a hardcore match, you're outside the ring, or if you're inside the ring and you have the advantage of having the ropes. Just my personal opinion. After that, we saw Dave Mastiff and Jack Starrs training at the PC, which, they're just building more, they're kind of giving each other some tips and tricks and stuff from, because they're very different types of wrestlers, but they're building up for their big tag team that they're trying to put together, which I'm all for. I love the idea of the two of them as a tag team. You got Jack Starrs, who's like the super fast, super athletic dude, and Dave Mastiff, who's the strong muscle of the group. I mean, it's the immovable object, I think he even called himself, of the group, or he said he was immobile, or whatever, however he termed it, whatever phrase he used. But I like the idea of them as a tag team. I'm excited to see more of them. And the main event of the show, we had Mustache Mountain, the team of Trent Seven and Tyler Bate, over the team of Symbiosis, who was Primate and T-Bone with Eddie Dennis on the outside. This was a damn good tag team match. I really enjoyed this one. There was a couple little things that I didn't think were like perfect. Like, for instance, at one point, I think it was T-Bone hit a splash off the top rope and like clearly landed on his hands and knees before he hit the ground. Like, that's, once again, nitpicking, but like the camera was right there. It was unmissable. But the rest of this match I thought was pretty awesome. I love the finish when Eddie Dennis grabs Tyler Bate, who's on the ring apron, and Outsider edges him into the barricade and then throws him back into the ring. Like, that was really, really nice. The finish was Mustache Mountain hitting the diving knee, Birmingham hammer. I always call it the Burning Hammer because that's obviously the name of the move, but Trent's version, the Birmingham hammer, basically the combo for the 1-2-3. No problems at all with any of this, obviously. Like, Mustache Mountain, I think Tyler Bate, you know, Tyler Bate's my favorite wrestler on the whole brand. There's others that I really enjoy, obviously, like Dragunov and Walter and all those guys, but my favorite is Tyler Bate. I think him and Trent Seven are an awesome tag team, and they're awesome as singles wrestlers. And I like how NXT UK, pretty often, the show just will end with the good guys winning, you know? And that's, you know, but that's kind of a missed thing, I think, or kind of a forgotten thing in wrestling. Sometimes just send the TV viewers home, or send them home, they're already home, but you know what I mean? Leave them happy with how the show ends. And then you got the tease afterwards where Pretty Deadly comes out, you know, on the entrance ramp, and it looks like we'll get Pretty Deadly versus Mustache Mountain for the tag team titles soon, which will be an awesome match. I can't wait to see that. So, great stuff from NXT UK this week. If for no other reason, if you just have just some time, maybe like 20, 30 minutes, I would highly recommend watching Mustache Mountain versus Symbiosis. I thought it was a really solid tag team match. Moving on, we have Ring of Honor results. Started off with, what do we got here? Flip Gordon over world famous CB got the win with an SDF. And from what I'm hearing, it sounds like they're going to be doing Flip Gordon versus Bandido for the ROH tag team title soon. So that'll probably be a really good match, but I don't know how much the fans are like looking forward to the matchup. But we'll see how it all goes. But they're building Flip, I believe, towards a match with Bandido for the championship. So obviously it made sense for him to go over CB our former cheeseburger, once again, STF for the submission win. After that, we had PCO and Sledge fight to a no contest. This was a pretty good for what it lasted. I love Danhausen on commentary during this one. He adds so much to every show he's on, in my opinion. I think Danhausen just super unique, and the way that he's just really committed to that character, I just think is great. I'm a very big fan. But the finish of this one, basically, PCO and Sledge did a lot of cool stuff. Like, PCO did his, you know, senton, you know, to like onto the ring apron at one point, and they had hit each other with some dives and some big power moves and whatnot. But they eventually just kept fighting into the crowd, well, the empty arena, but where the crowd would normally be. And the ref kept trying to, like, break them apart, and PCO and Sledge each separately, like, shoved the referee, and the ref eventually just called the match off. So that's just going to keep building for all that. And, of course, they're the tag team with PCO and Danhausen going forward. And then the main event of the show, we had Dak Draper defeat Dalton Castle and Eli Isom. Got the win with the Magnum Drop, which is basically like a version of the Wasteland that Wade Barrett used to do. Basically like the, if you remember, it's like a fireman's carry, but it'll throw you in front of him. So the big story, though, of this match was how Dalton Castle helped Dak Draper win. And Dalton Castle's boys were like basically cheering on for Dak Draper. So Castle pretty much sacrificed himself winning by hitting Isom with the chair and basically allowing Draper to hit his finisher onto Isom and getting the win. But after the match, Draper shook hands with Isom, even though Isom was like still out on the ground. He shook his hand, and they were both looking at the peacock feathers that Dalton Castle left behind. So this more storyline stuff, you know, I've said it 1,000 times. I'm just not a big fan of Dalton Castle. Like, it's nothing like against him personally at all. I've actually heard interviews of his, and he seems like a very likable guy. And it's not even like the gimmick of the boys and whatnot. I just think there's just something just doesn't click for me with him. Maybe it's that I don't think he's that great in the ring, but I also am not that into the character. Because if you're going to take like a kind of an over the top flamboyant type character, like, I think like Effie, for instance, is like the perfect version of what Dalton Castle is kind of trying to be. I don't know if that's a good comparison or not, but that's probably the closest one I can make. If I could say, like, somebody who I think is doing something similar very effectively and making me a really big fan of it would be Effie. Somebody doing the same kind of thing, but it just isn't really landing with me, would be Dalton Castle, if that makes sense. But we'll see where it goes with him and Dak Draper and Eli Isom and this whole story. But that's pretty much all there is to talk about with Ring of Honor this week. We had 3 matches. Flip and CB was okay for what it was, but I mean, there was really no chance that I don't think anyone thought Cheeseburger was winning that one. PCO and Sledge just continued the story, between the two and in tag team division as well. And then the main event was also just basically storyline progression, where you're now wondering, like, is Draper gonna align with Castle? Is Draper gonna align with Isom? Is Isom gonna pull a swerve and wind up going along with Castle because he can't seem to beat the dude, and the guy's costing him matches, and so we'll see where it all heads. But once again, that was Ring of Honor TV this week. After that, we got some National Wrestling Alliance results. This one, what I'm going to do real quick is I'm going to explain the championship series to the best of my ability, and then I'll tell you the results of the first show of it, of like the championship series that involves matches from that. So I'm going to do my best to explain this. Basically, there's 4 teams. The teams are led by Nick Aldis, Camille, the Pope, and Aaron Stevens. They all have legends with them. Austin Idol, Melina, Taryn Terrell, Velvet Sky. No offense, but I don't know if I'd use the term legends when referring to all those names or not. Just being totally honest there. I think that's kind of you're kind of liberally using the word legend, I think, in some of those cases. And basically, the whole point of the tournament is they draft teams of 5, and it's so hard to explain, but basically, the winning team, everybody on that team gets title shots. The captain gets to like it has protection from their own team. So like their own teammates can't challenge the captains, but they can choose whatever title they want to go after, and it's on a point system. So week after week there's points, and there's different scores depending on if it's a win, a DQ, or a draw. Once again, sounds very confusing, but that's how it works out. And the teams that wind up getting drafted last week, which I didn't go over because I knew I'd do it all this week with the first kind of week of it. So we had the teams are laid out. We have Team Camille and Austin Idol consists of course, Camille, Tom Latimer, Kenzie Page, J.R. Kratos, Mims, and Sal Renaro. We have Team Aaron Stevens and Taryn Terrell, which, of course, you got Aaron Stevens up at the top. Then you've got Tyrus, Lady Frost, JTG, Marche Rocket, and Jordan Clearwater. You've got Team Nick Aldis and Molina, which, of course, at the top, you got Nick Aldis. Then his team of Crimson, Sky Blue, Fred Rosser, Slice Boogie, and Jeremiah Plunkett. And then you got Team Pope and Velvet Sky. Up at the top, you got Pope, of course. Then you've got Trevor Murdoch, Genocide, Jax Dane, Mystery Man, and Colby Carino. The matches that we're going to get, and of course, you know, the captains don't wrestle throughout this, but those were like, they're the current wrestlers that, you know, you normally see on the show. Like, the reason I singled them out is like Austin Idol, of course, isn't going to be wrestling at all. And we just don't see a lot of Taryn Terrell and Velvet Sky wrestling. We do see Molina more often now, but I'd consider her more of a legend than Velvet Sky and Taryn Terrell. Molina seems to be in kind of the best position of the three still. She's going to be wrestling Deonna Purrazzo soon at that Empower show. I mean, that's a pretty big spot to be in. But these are the Block A and Block B matchups. We've got Tom Latimer versus Marche Rocket, Mims versus JTG, Kenzie Page versus Lady Frost, and JR Kratos versus Tyrus. That's Block A. Block B, we have Sky Blue against Genocide, Fred Rosser against Trevor Murdoch, Crimson against Mystery Man, and Slice Boogie against Jax Dane. So the results for some of these matches that have started, this was the latest episode of Power. We have Tom Latimer over Marche Rocket, so Team Camille gets the win over Team Stevens. We had Genocide over Sky Blue, so Genocide for Team Pope with the win over Sky Blue of Team Aldis. We had JTG over Mims, JTG representing Team Stevens and Mims representing Team Camille. And we had Trevor Murdoch over Fred Rosser, so Trevor Murdoch representing Team Pope and Fred Rosser representing Team Aldis. So the standings as of right now, because of the way each match was finished, we have Team Aldis and Molina at no points. We have Team Camille and Idol at 5 points, Team Velvet and Pope at 10 points, and Team Stevens and Terrell at 5 points. So that's where we're at with the NWA. I will keep you updated on the championship series week by week right here on the Fightful Weekender podcast. And last but never least, we have a recap of the latest Being the Elite episode titled Your Bloody Hands. Show starts off with the Elite talking about how they're going to try to take out Frankie Kazarian. Frankie Kazarian's wrestling a match on AEW Dark. Brandon Cutler, they talk up Brandon Cutler to go out there and spray him with the cans of Cool Spray or whatever exactly. I think it's all Cool Spray. And he goes out there and trips over the ropes, and Frankie winds up spraying it all over Cutler's face. After that, we have Nick Jackson talking about basically how the Dark Order is not allowed on the show anymore, and Cutler's note from last week's show, and Leva Bates is in the background with all these signs like Justice for Dark Order and Dark Order Ally. And basically, Nick winds up talking to Leva, tells her to get lost, and Leva says she misses Alex Reynolds because he's in the Dark Order and she wants him back on the show, and they obviously have a little relationship going on right now. So yeah, basically, that's what that is. After that, we see the Wingmen. It's Benoni, Drake, Avalon, and Nemeth. Avalon's talking about how he has a new crush on this redhead, and it turns out to be Abaddon. So the rest of the Wingmen go up to try to make the kind of like the handoff, right? Like where they're going up and they're going to talk up Avalon to Abaddon, and then Avalon, like, that's so hard to say, Avalon, Abaddon, because it's so close. Maybe that's why they're doing it. But basically, they're trying to get Abaddon to go talk to Avalon, and she just starts, like, puking green sludge out of her mouth, as she's known to do. And they all basically run away because they're scared. After that, Marco Stunt defends the BT Championship against Luchasaurus. It's a handstand competition, just straight up the person who can stay in a handstand longest is the champion. And Marco Stunt beats Luchasaurus. It was actually pretty entertaining. It was a close one. Marco almost fell a couple times, but he recovered. After that, the hands, Arthur and Trevor, are talking to Christian Cage, who's clearly asleep. He's got sunglasses on. Looks a lot like Orange Cassidy at the moment. He basically, the Arthur and Victor are, or sorry, Arthur and Trevor are just talking about how they're joking about how, like, they were told that they were going to get a cage match for the main event of a show, and they're like, no, not a Christian Cage. And then they were talking about, like, Brian Cage and too many cages, and basically it's stuff that fans are complaining about, how there's too many cages, pages, blah blah blah. That basically that's the meme in that one. After that, Kenny Omega is trying to shave off his facial hair again. He's been doing this week after week and keeps getting sidetracked. And basically this time he has the cold spray and he's gonna try to, like, basically freeze it off of his face. But Gallows is getting beat up in the ring, so he has to go out and make the save. Says he's gonna have to just shave it next week. After that, in another segment that's just so mind-boggling and I just don't get it all, it was pretty long. Ryan Nemeth continues the whole cream saga that we've been seeing. He's basically on a mountain, and he brings the cream to this spot, and the cream transforms into what looked like a jar of gold. And then he winds up taking that gold to a different spot, and then it turns back into cream. And then he talks about how he's on Cream Mountain, and he's really distraught over it, and I just don't understand it at all. After that, we see footage that the Dark Order had mailed to Brandon Cutler, and Cutler's totally freaking out that he doesn't want this information to get out there. It was an episode from years ago that involved Cutler in a murder, and it's footage of Cutler, like, washing his hands vigorously in, like, red, presumably blood, in the sink and everything. And he takes off a Dark Order mask and, like, reveals, like, he was wearing the mask and all this stuff. So basically, because he's being blackmailed by Dark Order, Brandon Cutler has to show the footage Dark Order sent him, like, different footage, so that they can get back onto the show. Basically, Dark Order has been, kicked off of BTE, but now they've blackmailed themselves back onto being on the show. And the main gist of, like, the end of the episode is, and you have to keep in mind, this is all from Monday, so since then we've seen the Dark Order versus the Elite in their 5-on-5 match, but this is building towards that. And the Dark Order gift Hangman what looks like the gear that he wore for Wednesday's Dynamite or Fight for the Fallen, and it was really good. I mean, it's just a heart to heart. The Dark Order, just they believe in Hangman, and Hangman is just really happy that they're all gonna get something out of, hopefully winning this match, which they wound up losing, by the way. But yeah, I mean, this was just really well done, and the Dark Order is all hugging each other, and John Silver gets in the middle of the hug, and it's your standard Dark Order stuff, but it was really good in my opinion. And it was really cool to see the entrances on Wednesday. Like, that Dark Order entrance was one of my favorite entrances in wrestling that I've seen in, like, the last 10 years. Like, that was perfectly done. So yeah, good stuff. Solid episode of BT this week. Actually, much better than normal. It was good that we didn't get any Nyla Rose, Ryzen, Vicky Guerrero stuff. Which I think I saw someone jokingly say that, like, they're just gonna give up on that, and hopefully that's the case. But it's been replaced by this weird Ryan Nemeth thing that I don't get. But the rest of the show I thought was really well done. So that's gonna do it for this episode of the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. I've been Steven Jensen. Make sure to shoot me a follow on Twitter at @FightTalk_. FIGHTTALK _. Make sure to give this podcast a like. Just hit the like button here on FightfulSelect.com. Show everyone that you are enjoying the show. And more importantly, I get to see that and go, hey, thanks a lot for the thumbs up or the like or whatever. I really appreciate that. The positive support and the feedback always helps me out. Always a good thing to see. So please do that. And yeah, till next weekend, Joyce Professional Wrestling.